रहस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नम ओं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमद्भक्तिचारुस्वामिनीति नाम्ने स्निग्धचेत सुप्रणेत वाग्मिनं चरसाप्लुतं प्रभुपादगतप्राणं नौमि भक्तिचारुपणम्। नम ओं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमद्भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनीति नाम्ने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादि पश्चातिदेशकारिणे मुखं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं दिनतारिणम्। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भगवत सेवया भगवति उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। So I guess everyone hoped that His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami would give class, but I think that today you have to do it with me only. So you have to please bear me. But still, before I start speaking, I beg for all your blessings. I may be able to speak some valuable words from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So thank you for coming. Today we're reading from the fourth canto, chapter 4, entitled Sarikvat Sarbadi, text number 33. अदवर्युना हुयमाने अदवर्युना हुयमाने देवा उत्पेतुर ओजसा देवा उत्पेतुर ओजसा ऋभवो नाम तपसा ऋभवो नाम तपसा सोमं प्राप्ता सहस्रशः सोमं प्राप्ता सहस्रशः अद्वर्युणा हुयमाने देवा उत्पेतुर ओजसा ऋभवो नाम तपसा सोमं प्राप्ता सहस्रशः। Others. अद्वर्युणा by the priest, Brigo, sorry, Brigo, by the priest Brigo. Uyamane, oblations being offered. Devaha, demigods. Utpetuhu, became manifested. Ojasa, great strength. Rishabhavaha, the ribhus. Vibhava, the ribhus. Nama, named. Tapasa, by penance. Somam, soma. Praptaha, having achieved. Sahasrashaha, by the thousands. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. When Bhrigu Muni offered oblations in the fire, immediately many thousands of demigods named ribhus became manifested. All of them were powerful, having achieved strength from Soma, the moon. Purport. It is stated here that many thousands of demigods named ribhus became manifested because of the oblations offered in the fire and the chanting of the hymns from the Yajurveda. Brahmanas like Bhrigu Muni were so powerful that they could create such powerful demigods simply by chanting the Vedic mantras. Vedic mantras are still available, but the chanters are not. By chanting Vedic mantras or chanting the Gayatri or Rig mantra, one can attain the results one desires. In the present age of Kali, it is recommended by Lord Chaitanya that simply by chanting Hare Krishna, one can attain all perfection. So, we continue. Sati quits her body. Here we find a very interesting scene of the power and the education of Veda, the power of Vedic education here. These mantras which Bhrigu is chanting are coming from the Yajurveda, Vajasaney Sanghita 1.9, for those who are interested. So, throughout the scriptures, one also finds other examples of fire sacrifices creating amazing things. In the very beginning of creation, the first fire sacrifice was performed by Lord Brahma himself. It's called the, what is the fire sacrifice called? The first fire sacrifice. Anybody has any idea? Yes, the Purusha Homa was performed and the Purusha Shukta was chanted. And from this Homa, the original sacrifice, everything came into existence. Brahma didn't use a shovel or a spade and then create villages and cities, no. He took the Virat form and sacrificed it to the Virat form. And in this way, he created everything in existence. That was the first sacrifice ever performed. Then you have other examples like Tvashta, he created Vritrasur from a fire sacrifice. Vasishtha, he created by a Putra Kameshthi Yagya, Rama, Lakshman, Bharat and Shatrughna. You also have Vishwamitra, who created the Trishanku heavens. It's a very far out story how he did that, but you don't have much time to go into that. But the king's name was actually Satyavrat, but because he kidnapped a Brahmana's daughter, he was cursed to become a Chandal, and then he became Trishanku. So he knew about the competition between Vishwamitra and Vasishtha, and he managed to get his own Swarga, his own heavenly planets called Trishanku Swarga. Just still visible, I think, in the sky, isn't it? Then we have Upayaja in the Mahabharata. He performs a sacrifice and Dhristajyumna and Draupadi are born from the fire. You see? Then we have Kardama. During the beginning of end of Dwapara Yuga, he performs a fire sacrifice and the Prajapati of the Malachas, Adama, is born from Adam and Eve. He was born from the fire sacrifice of Kardama. Then, more recently, in 2006, there was a desert, a flood in Rajasthan, because a year before there was a drought declared. So the Brahmanas did a 3-day Parijanya Homa, so Rajasthan desert was flooded. Then we have Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami's Sudarshan Mahahomas on the Shinga Chaturdasi, which used to create storms and rain. I do not know what is the cause that they don't create it anymore. So these are examples what Vedic sacrifices are capable of doing. Then we have the 16 Samadhyayini mantras, which are mentioned in the Rig Veda. By chanting them, fire is invoked, fire is invited to appear in the fire pit, like that. So these are some examples of the power of Vedic mantras and Vedic education. Now here Bhrigu, he is evoking the Ribhu demigods. And these demigods are in charge of protecting fire sacrifices. So, what made this beautiful yajna of Daksha come to this point where there is going to be a war between the Ganas of Shiva and the Ribhu demigods? The actual bare core cause of this is sex desire. See, Daksha's sex desire causes him to have all kinds of desires for prestige, anger. As a matter of fact, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya are different manifestations of lust. They're not something different than lust. I realized this when I was in Vraj with some incidents which happened there. Somebody became very angry. But anger is simply that one lusty desire is not satisfied. And the Gita mentions that jayato vishayan punsa sangasteshu bajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodho vijayate krodhad bhavati sammoha sammohat sammohasmriti vibhrama etc. Lust is the original cause for all these kinds of negative desires. And Daksha was very lusty after prestige. He wanted to be worshipped in assembly of the devas. And Lord Shiva, he did not comply to his desires, so he wanted to kill him. And actually he killed him, because insult of a very great personality is the same as killing. And Krishna mentions that, for those who have enjoyed fame, infamy is worse than death. So in this way, he committed Brahmana Hatya, he committed murder of Lord Shiva. He wanted to find fault. And the idea behind this is that, if I can find a fault in somebody, that means I've seen something in him which he did not see, and the assembly did not see. So in this way, I'm superior, because I have the eyes by which I can see that fault. Like this. The other murder he committed was killing Sati. Sati was his favorite daughter. And the Dharma Shastra mentions that a friend is punished by... How do you punish a friend? By neglect. See? Now Sati is not simply a friend. She is the favorite daughter of Daksha. And if you neglect her, it's equal as killing her. So, in this way, Daksha actually committed two murders. He killed Lord Shiva and his wife Sati. For this, he had to pay. He definitely had to pay. He had to die twice. The story of Daksha continues after this section in the upper cantos. That Daksha, he will be killed by Virabhadra, and he will obtain a goat's head. Then he will also give up that body, and he performs tapasya for 6 manvantaras to purify himself for this offense. And then he has darshan of Lord Vishnu, and he offers the Hansa Guhya prayers. But then after the Hansa Guhya prayers, after so much tapasya, still Daksha asks for what benediction did he ask for after offering the Hansa Guhya prayers? Anybody remembers? Yes, he wanted to have the benediction for unlimited sex desire. So this is Daksha. And that sex desire leads again to another offense, the same offense he committed before, now towards Narad Muni. You see, this is the fault in sex desire. So he loses his position, of course, as the son of Brahma. He becomes the son of more or less ordinary woman. He becomes the son of Marisha and the Prachetas, like that. He's not the son of Brahma anymore, this Daksha. So I've seen in my preaching that when I was preaching in our yatra, then some of my students at one point turned against me, saying that brahmachari is all nonsense, it's not true, and you know, you should be honest. There are no brahmacharis, they're all just simply bachelors, and you should be honest and get married. And so I was wondering what happened to them. I couldn't understand it. Later I found out that they were having difficulties in following the regulative principles. So they wanted to justify by speaking like this. And it is there. If one has difficulties, one has fall downs, one can react in two ways.
humbly admitting, Prabhu, I can't follow. Some did that also, came to me, Prabhu, I had a fall, now what should I do? So then you give the general instructions you gave, like Bhakti Thakur said, you chant more rounds, perform some extra prayaschitta by chanting more rounds, and you ask for forgiveness, and you continue your devotional service. But others had another reaction, that no, it's not true, nobody can follow. We should follow the natural way, everyone should get married, like that. So if that is natural, then many other things are also natural. The animal extincts. So these were used as justifications. But of course, Lord Rishabhdev is of another opinion. What does he say? Nayam deho deho bhajan nriloke kashtan kaman arhate vidbhujangaje. Tapo divram putraka yena saptam suddhetam jasmat brahma saukhyam tu anantam. We often heard, at least in our yatra, I don't know if you hear it, have you heard it here, that if you ask sometimes, where is he hanging out? Why is he not coming for the programs? Oh, he's a hard-working man, implying he's a sincere and good man. But a hard-working man doesn't have to be a very good man, according to Rishabhadeva. One is working very hard for sense gratification is equal to a hog, according to Rishabhadeva, this verse. Human life is not meant for working for sense gratification like hogs, dogs, camels and asses. But it's meant to purify in order to obtain spiritual happiness. That is the message of this verse. So a hard-working man is not synonymous to a good man. It requires a lot of labor to acquire, you know, a lion's urine. But it's not very useful and it's not a good labor. See, hard work is not synonymous to being a good man. So now, human life, the very foundation for human life is Gurukul education. There is where it all begins, in the Gurukul. In the Gurukul, a brahmachari has learned what is the goal of human life. The goal of human life is to learn yajna. Krishna mentions, yajnyarthat karmano nyatra lokoyam karma bandhanah tadartham karma kaunteya mukta sangha samachara. If one has to work in this world, then work will either bind or liberate. So what is the criteria that work will either bind or liberate you? It's yajna. Everything has to be performed for the pleasure of Vishnu. And yajna is born out of prescribed duties. Like that. So, Krishna mentions also in the same section of the Gita, this is the third chapter, how a human is supposed to maintain himself. And it is not, surprisingly enough, by hard work in a factory or in some kind of office. No, he mentions, human life's maintenance is obtained by annad bhavanti bhutani parajanyat anna sambhavah yagyad bhaviti parajanya yagya karma samudbhava. The way to maintain oneself in a human body is by performing yagyas. So that's why it is so important that a Gurukuli is trained in performing yajnas. See? By doing this, he will acquire the proper piety. In a Gurukul, one has to sleep on the floor. I hope. Or not. Yes. With a mattress. And this kind of tapasyas burns off previous obstacles or sins of past lives. So, if one enters the Gurukul, the Acharya will know, okay, if I tell this disciple to do this and this austerity, then this obstacle will be burned up by his tapasya. And simultaneously, by proper performance of the Gurukul or the Brahmachari duties, it creates enough piety that after 15 years of Brahmachari training, if one enters the Grihastha ashram, then one can simply live off his piety, doesn't have to work. If you wonder why the prachetas had to go to the forest, actually they went to a lake, to perform tapasya in order to become qualified emperors, this is the reason. By their strength of tapasya, when they became the emperors, simply by desire, they could accomplish tasks. So now, if one fails in this piety, then of course one has to work. But then still, once we see that those who have performed proper brahmachari training, by a little bit of labor, they can easily maintain themselves. Like that. Because this is Krishna's promise. If one tries to please Krishna, then he will provide for your income, for your maintenance, like that. But that's not only the only benefit of the yajna. The Gurukul education, in the Gurukul education, one has to study scriptures. And in these scriptures, one finds what is called a shruti phal. After a certain pastime, one finds that a brahmana who reads this obtains the highest swarga. A kshatriya who reads this, this pastime will obtain name and fame and power. A vaishya who reads this will gain wealth. And a shudra will gain enough maintenance to fill his belly, like that. One finds benedictions. So by studying shlokas and scriptures, these benedictions are included. These are included. Then also here the Prabhupada says in a purport, by chanting the Gayatri or Riga Mantra, one can attain the results one desires. This is the setup of Gurukul education. This is the setup. So, not only that, the education which is done in the Gurukul also creates divine qualities. We have a verse in the Bhagavatam. Yasya asti bhakti bhagavatir akinchana sarvair gunaistatra samasate sura. So like that, if one performs the proper duties of pleasing Lord Vishnu by one's brahmachari duties, one obtains qualities which the devatas have. And a brahmachari who is properly performing his gurukul duties, guess what? The devatas are eager to associate with him. Right? So have you seen any devatas recently? Maybe not. Okay, go on doing your brahmachari duties, because it says even in the Purusha Sukta, Rucham Brahmam Janayantaha Deva Agne Tadabruvanne Yastvaivo Brahmano Vidyate Tasya Deva Ashanvashe. It is the shloka just before the last one, which says, this is translation by some Sri Vaishnava, so forgive me if it's not fully according to your taste. The devas who teach Brahma Ruchi, which is the same as Rishabhdev is saying in this verse, Brahma Saukhyam. The devas who teach Brahma Ruchi or Brahma taste told in ancient times that he who is interested in Brahman would have the devas under his control. Brahmacharis who are interested in Brahman, they will have devatas under their control. You see? You can control devas. So, another example here is Markandeya Rishi. He was so powerful that Cupid came with all his entourage and his wife and all the apsaras. Then it says, his attempts were just like an attempt of an atheist. He dramatically failed and he left the scene. Markandeya's mind did not even move an inch. So determined in his tapasya, in his steadiness. That attracted the demigods of Lord Shiva and Parvati. They came to benedict Markandeya. It says he was meditating and Lord Shiva came and he didn't greet him. But Lord Shiva understood, oh, he's still absorbed in Lord Vishnu. So what he did, he entered in the core of the heart, in that petal, where actually Lord Vishnu resides. And Markandeya was meditating and thinking, huh? Who's this? He didn't know that, he couldn't recognize that it's for Lord Shiva. He was so absorbed in his meditation. So he opened his eyes. And then Lord Shiva and Parvati gave him benedictions, like that. Prahlad's attitude always invited the benediction of Narad Muni, you see. So this is the proper attitude and a proper Gurukul training. Another thing is that Gurukul education is the foundation for a cultural identity. Nowadays so much in demand, what kind of culture should we follow? A cultural identity we need. So the cultural identity is that we are Aryans and we are following the culture of the Devatas and Lord Vishnu. That is our identity. We live Deva culture. And Gurukul education supplies that. Because Gurukul education is Deva culture. So now, this culture will produce Brahmanas like Bhrigu Muni. Very powerful Munis with Brahma Tejasa. So I looked up, what is this Brahma Tejasa actually? What is so powerful about Brahma Tejasa? In Kapildev teachings, one finds that the universe was created in 8 main dimensions or existential layers. Earth, water, fire, air, etc., etc. The layer which is on the outer end of the universe, one layer is called Mahatattva. And Mahatattva is the potency of the Supreme Lord, His Brahman potency, which creates the elements of the universe. So Brahmana, who's properly performing Brahmachari duties, that potency, that Brahma Tejasa, that Brahman effulgence, manifests in him. And Mahaprabhu showed that to Prakashananda Saraswati. So if one sees a very effulgent Brahmachari, Brahmana, one has to understand how advanced he is. He's on a level of Vasudeva Sattva, because Mahatattva means Vasudeva Sattva. See? So now, that power of Brahma Jyoti, of course we don't have much information of Brahma Jyoti, but one thing we understand, and even modern science, pranic scientists, they agree with this, this spiritual potency of Lord Vishnu is so powerful, it can recreate the entire universe. See? So with this power, Bhrigu is just offering one oblation, Swaha, and the Ribhus appear. You see? That power is acquired if one performs proper brahmachari duties. You see? That is the power. The devatas cannot stop a brahmachari. Pakka brahmachari. Not a wishy-washy brahmachari. A pakka brahmachari. So reference for this is the Brahmastra weapon which Ashwatthama threw. Prabhupada mentions that. That the Brahma Tejas of this Brahmastra is the Brahman effulgence. See, if a Brahmastra is thrown, it can destroy the entire creation. Only another Brahmastra can counter it. You see, that's the power of Brahman Tejas. So, this is the metaphysical explanation behind this. The yogic explanation is that by controlling the semen, it rises upwards. Urdhvaretasa. Then virya becomes ojasa, which becomes tejasa. And then you have this big, huge effulgence. And then whatever you say, people will accept because of your power, your brahmana tejas. See? So like that. Now, having glorified Vedic education, unfortunately, when the British asuras entered India, they were shocked to see all this. See all this power and effulgence. And so therefore, Lord Mikoli Asura, he wrote to the British Parliament in 1835, 2nd of February, he wrote as follows. I'm going to read this. I think you'll be shocked, but those who know it, they might what it expect was going to come. He says, I have traveled across the length and breadth of India and have not seen one person who is a beggar, who is a thief. Such wealth I have seen in this country, such high moral values, people of such caliber that I do not think that we would ever conquer this country unless we break its backbone, its very backbone of this nation, which is our spiritual and cultural heritage. And therefore, I propose that we replace her old and ancient educational system, her culture. For if the Indians think that all that is foreign and English is good and greater than their own, they will lose their self-esteem, their native culture, and they will become what we want them, a truly dominated country or nation, he says. See? This was the idea of the Britishers. They came in India, no beggars? Such high moral values. And, you know, he is an asura definitely, but he has got a lot of intelligence here. So to say in asuric language, he's damn good. He exactly knows what to do, how to break it, you see. See, what he did, and that's what, this Macaulay, by the way, is the one who sponsored Max Muller to mistranslate the Vedic scriptures, for your information. So what they did, according to like Atma Tattva, what he said, I heard in a lecture saying that, when Motilal Nehru, he was the first treasurer at the time of independence, when Motilal Nehru opened the Indian state treasury, he only found cockroaches. Cockroaches. Because everything was already in London, you see. It was what the British tried to do, and they succeeded in that. They robbed India's wealth, brought it to England, and now what they are saying, you guys are all poor because you're also religious, and these rascal Indian politicians are following the same system. Go work. Work is worship. They say like that, you see, isn't it? This whole British manipulation is going on. So it's coming from that time. So, and therefore he says, replace its ancient education system, her culture, you see. So this is what the British just gave. They gave MAs and PhDs. But they're simply sinful MAs and sinful PhDs. Become a master in sin. Become a doctor of philosophy in sin. That's basically what it is. Because it's all against soul consciousness. Soul murder. That's what it actually is. Unfortunately, despite knowing all this and being in Prabhupada's society, we still find this Macaulay syndrome. I'm going to say something, might be controversial, but excuse me. Often we find that when it comes to accepting Western gizmos and gadgets and inventions, devotees tend to accept it without question. And as soon as it is something Indian, some Indian science, did Prabhupada ever quote like that? Prabhupada ever say like this? This is called the Macaulay syndrome. see, accepting everything which is foreign is good, better than our own. And if Prabhupada didn't say it, then we shouldn't follow, we should question that. But if Prabhupada ever say we should use pen drives, mobile phones, he didn't mention these things. Why are you using them? Oh, it's yukta vairagya. Yukta vairagya means using everything which is Western and rejecting everything as Indian. There's, sometimes you find this Macaulay syndrome among, unfortunately, the devotee community. See? Another Macaulay syndrome here is the Indian divide and rule policy. It's the South Indians, the South Indian politicians, they are very much vehemently against the South Indians learning the national language, Hindi, of India. But they are very much pro learning them English. So this Macaulay's language, excuse me, it's Macaulay's language, you see, all manipulation. They say, oh no, no, we don't want to be inferior by learning Hindi. Then learn Sanskrit, who cares? You see? But if you follow the Macaulay's ideas, he will smile at you. He will say, Dandavats, thank you for following my instructions, faithfully. Like that. So therefore, another thing here is that the Indians have lost so much of their knowledge and of the culture that it was Bollywood, Indian film industry, who coined this term, Kali Angrej. Kali Angrej means Britishers are white, you see, Delhi they are white. So now these are Indians who are completely Britisher in all their habits, drinking tea without washing their mouth, not regularly taking bath anymore. The only thing they couldn't do is whiten their skin, so they are dark, black. Therefore, Kali Angrej or Black Britishers. This is a term was coined by the Bollywood film industries. You know, it's very ironic to see that all these things are happening. So now, okay, regarding all these cynical jokes, then what is actually the proper way of, I would say, now let us compare then Vedic education against modern education. See, the ancient Gurukul education system, it comes in four parts. The first part is hearing from the Guru. And a Guru is a qualified person, a personality who is a Tattva Darshi, who can see the supreme Tattva, the absolute truth. He sits there in the Gurukul and he teaches. This is the first part of Gurukul education. One hears from a qualified spiritual master. The second part of Vedic education is self-study. And for self-study, one requires brahmacharya. Because if one is involved in love affairs, then when the romance books opens, when the Romeo and Juliet or Laila Majnu opens, all the books are closed. Nobody cares for that. Do know much about history, do know much biology, but I do know that I love you, and I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world it would be. Oh yeah, isn't it? In a song of the 60s. So that illustrates, right, how all the subjects are cancelled because of love affairs. So, a third part of Vedic education is service to the Guru, menial service to Guru and his family. It invites a lot of blessings and affection from the Guru's family. The service to the Guru performed is done as humility, with humility and taking care of the Guru's cows, tilling the field for the Guru. One also learns Ayurveda and Jyotish like that. Did I mention all of that? Oh yeah, the fourth part is discussing with fellow students, like that. So these parts, according to Manu, are how Vedic education comes. Hearing from the Guru, self-study, discussing with fellow students, and service to the Guru. Now, if one looks at Prabhupada's process, which he gave, is exactly the same system. Exactly the same. Hearing from the spiritual master, Bhagavatam class like that, self-study, reading Prabhupada's books 2 hours a day, service, and discussing with fellow students or with devotees like that. So Prabhupada established that same system as our sadhana. Now in contrast to that, what is Western education? Western education, one hears from a materialistic speculator who has no real tattva gyan, and I wrote something very heavy. I don't know if I should say this. Anyway, leave it. Who basically runs after the lady teachers. If I have to think of my, you know, college education, that these were the teachers, very rascals, you see. They would relish, you know, criticizing religion. like that. This is Western British education, you see. Then British education also demands studying along with the girls. So then you have many cases of unmarried pregnancies, which are also rampant in India nowadays. The great gift of the British Empire. Then Western education gives you plenty of sinful impressions. Then one has plenty of sinful karma to suffer in future life. You see, this is in contrast with the piety which one attains by doing Gurukul education. The other gives impiety. You see, like that. And also, Western education, British education, means paid education. There is no question of service to the Guru. If I buy the Guru, then what is the point of being humble towards him? Suppose one day he was sick or he couldn't prepare his classes and he comes, "I'm sorry, I couldn't prepare my classes today." What? We paid, 20,000 rupees, to come and hear from you and you don't prepare your classes? It happens. It happens. Like that. So this is the Western education. Of course, I can go on and on like that. What is the purpose? See, the purpose of Vedic education is to learn yajna, but it's the purpose of the Western education is to make money by hook or by crook. So like that, these are the contradictions one finds in one side here. We have a pure Brahmana like Bhrigu who can perform a yajna and invoke devatas to protect his fire sacrifice. And on the other side, one has this Macaulay syndrome. So therefore, I conclude my lecture here that so we want to have qualified Brahmanas. The Prabhupada decided was like that. That we want to have a section of devotees to become pure and qualified Brahmanas who can do the sacrifices for the other section of the devotees. Oh yeah, that one last thing I just forgot to mention is that Gurukul education also gives you the knowledge of the 16 samskaras. Samskara means purificatory ceremonies. One learns the homas also. Anyway, so many things to say. And otherwise, if one describes for Western education, simply means that one creates another smile on the Macaulay's face. If I end here. Any questions? Yes.
When you said that the preach about the damage they gave to the media, they come back to you and they say, they abolished the Dacoits, there was Dacoits in the clubs, and they were just fresh people were afraid of the British, but they didn't come to it. They say they sati, there were 40 women doing sati and the British abolished that as well. And then they go on and say they made them, they gave them railway, roads, proper,
Okay. Okay, so arguments are given here, and the Britisher might say, we abolished the sati rights, self-immolation. We gave, what is the first one you said? The first one was dacoits. And we gave the railway system. Well, dacoits, baloney. Even very recently, in Chambal Valley, we had Pulanbai, a great dacoit which the police could not counter. So where were the Britishers? I'm talking about after independence. Another thing is that sati right, we didn't require the British to cancel that, you see. And besides, after the British left India, there are still cases of sati rite. And sati rite is not an inauspicious ceremony. A sati rite is not for an unchaste woman. Sati rite is the symbol of the chastity of a woman who is able by the sati rite even to bring a husband back to Godhead. So they don't even know what they're talking about. They're simply lusty. I would try to enjoy this woman. Why is she burning her body? That's actually the idea behind that. Not very noble ideas.
See? So you are saying that it was right for women to...
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying it is right to commit for women to force to sati. Sati is not a forced ritual.
But that's the practice at the time. They were forcing women.
Yes, it was everything degrades in Kali Yuga, right? But they were not... The degradation in India was not straightened by the Britishers. That's my point. It was straightened by Prabhupada. He did that. And the last thing you said, railways. The Britishers didn't make the railways. They enforced labor, Indian laborers, to build that. And not even in India. They brought Indians to Africa to build the railways. Like that. And besides, we are not against Western inventions, like Prabhupada said, the blind and the lame. We are against the Western culture and mentality. That was my point. Western education, I didn't say Western knowledge. I said Western education. The way it is taught, it degrades a human being. But he was probably very much like, a car or filtered water and things like that. So that's what we can use, but we don't take the Western culture as that.
That's we have to message. Give them the credit, Prabhu, that at least now in India, everywhere English language is spoken. Prabhupada came to the West and preached in this language, and now all of us became devotees, and we had the fortune to come and meet the Indian culture and meet the Vaishnava culture living in Mayapur. So something good they did also.
Yeah, again, I'm saying it's Prabhupada who did that. It's not the Britishers. See, it required a pure devotee. Mahaprabhu's army general, he's from Mahaprabhu's army general. He knows how to take the Mlecha language, right, and spiritualize that and give it for the purification of the world. They were not the Britishers who were preserving the Vedic heritage. That's my message here. And I'm not against the Britishers itself, no. I'm talking about the leaders. If you just talk about general people in the West, I'm from Holland. Nobody knows about these things. Nobody cares to know about these things. They're very much against what they did, actually. I went to the Leiden University Library in Holland, the Department of Indology, and I spoke to the librarian there. He's one of the students. He was very much against what the Britishers did. The first point he made, all these translations by Max Müller were simply to Christianize India. We know that. But fortunately, there's now an unbiased group of students of Indology who are retranslating those books. See? But there's a lot of fighting and bickering going on that because the present-day titles they earn, like PhD in Indology, are based on Max Müller's writings. So if you write all of that out, then your PhD is useless. And there was so much fighting going on. But you have to continue the war. See? We have to train ISKCON Sanskritists who give proper translations. That's Prabhupada's desire, Prabhupada's message. Prabhupada's message was to also re-establish Vedic culture as far as possible. See, like that. So it's not, my lecture is not meant to be anti-British or pro-Indian, something like that, not. The underlying message is very clear. The spiritual Gurukul education. That's my idea here. So I gave you all the examples because it's very much catching. And I'm happy that it worked. That you feel it, that something here is there which touches me. If it touches you, it is good. See, that was my message. Therefore, I mentioned this example of, Kali and Gret and things like that. Otherwise, why should I mention these kind of things? Is that?
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Yes, Guru. Could you use the mic?
Thank you for your class. I like to hear the discussion on Brahmacharya. It's very nice. I was wondering is that many of us didn't have Gurukul educations and we came to Brahmacharya life or to celibacy quite late in our lives. And you were mentioning all the benefits, the different benefits you get if you, Brahmacharya and get the Gurukul education and like that. Are those benefits still intact for people who start late in life?
Regarding this, I would avoid controversy, but I think you are just, as a person, are very much involved in the ISKCON social community. So one simply looks at that and one can find the answer. I would personally not say that it's not possible. We have the example, our head pujaris. Our head pujaris are the example that it's still possible. Head pujaris. Like that. That it's still possible to obtain all the benefits of Brahmacharya. See, ultimately Brahmacharya is not the goal of life. It is there, it's very helpful. The ultimate goal is to obtain Krishna, Krishna's lotus feet. So therefore, despite all the bad impressions, all the girlfriends you had in college, and all the bad things you did to the teacher and to your fellow students, just by Prabhupada's mercy alone, you're getting the benediction of forgetting all of that, having a rebirth by initiation, and still trying to follow Brahmacharya. But, it underlines my point that Western education is sinful, and therefore all these bad impressions keep, bewitching and ghosting in your mind while you're chanting, isn't it? So proper Brahmacharya training would eliminate that. Then one can chant properly, like that. So I would say it's still possible, but one has to endeavor a lot. One has to wash away all these samskaras. Of course, it's also not ultimately the fault of the common ignorant Western people, which you find on the street when you just put books. It's simply the leaders who propagate that. Very recently, very recently in Holland, there was a question by the government to the medical scientists that they are finding out that because of this this their debauchee education, that girls are becoming biologically mature at the age of 8, 9. So they were asking the medical scientists whether this is harmful or not. They said no. So they were very happy. So why would a materialist be very happy to have a girl who's biologically mature at 9? You see? Biologically mature at 9. You see? This is going on in the West. See? What reason did it happen in Holland? The headquarters of Kali. Yes, biological mature means you can get pregnant and get a kid. Kali was advancing. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu.
Actually, Prabhupada, if everybody follows Prabhupada's system, but Prabhupada established, morning time we have Mangalarati, then we have Japa, then we have a Bhagavatam class, which supposing actually like a class which we actually study, we progressively go through Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we have also Guru Puja, so worshipping the Guru is there, and do 2 hours of self-study every day, and before going to sleep, read Krishna book, then all these things are basically on place. All these brahmachari aspects are all in place. Yeah. You do your 2 hours of study, that's your svadhyaya, which you do every day, 2 hours of reading Prabhupada's books, studying Shastra, and then other things, all the other elements of serving the deity, and all these other elements, worshipping the Guru, are just there in our day-to-day sadhana. So if you follow this, then we are guaranteed to go back to Gathar. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentions, if somebody chants the Mangalarati prayer every morning, then end of his life surely will go back to Gathar. He says that.
Jaho, Mangalarti ki jai.
Jai.
So one should then, don't miss Mangalarti without fail. Huh? Is that the brahmachari? Sometimes it's a brahmachari, sometimes not. No. Yes?
They say, there is an argument why teaching the kids the British education here in Mayapur, that when they learn, they will be able to have a profession when they grow up. If they become grihasthas, they will have a profession, they can maintain their family. So what would you have to say about
okay,
that?
That's okay, but my point is, why educate them in a British way? Can't we teach them in a Vedic way, that same knowledge? You know, we have construction we can teach construction in a Vedic way, we can teach computering in a Vedic way. Why teach them, you know, in a British way? It means invite them for you know, to shout with the girls or something like that. This is not, you know, the proper way to educate them. See, my spiritual master is building in Ujjain a school in order to make that an IIT campus, that we will teach them the sciences which they teach in IIT in the proper way. Not in this debauched way. All these so-called professors and MAs, you know, I recall all my teachers in university. What would they do? After the school was closed, they would go to the teacher's canteen where students were not allowed. Why not? Because there they get completely drunk and smoke like that. So the students are not allowed to see that. You see? This is a Western system of education. What is the use of that? What example will you have? He's playing to be the holy man in the class, and after the class, and in the teacher's canteen, he's the Ramana there. That's my message. It's not that, like I'm saying, I'm not against that knowledge. You see, it's not like that. But like I'm saying, to have a profession simply means you don't have faith that Vedic or Gurukul training will give you the enough piety to work. Work is for sinful people, you know that? Prabhupada said that? You have to work like an ass means you are sinful. The upper class in India don't need to work. Brahmanas don't need to work. They do yajnas, they get everything they desire. Kshatriyas, they don't have to work. Avaisha has his own business. He doesn't work for anybody. Why? Because they have proper piety by properly following the process. That's my message here. So if one keeps performing the duties, then simply by this, what is the Vedic statement? Dharma rakshati rakshita. If you protect your dharma, dharma will protect you. See, like that. This is the point here. Why train them into becoming shudras? You got such a nice education, Prabhupada, who can train them. They can go back to Godhead if they just go to Krishna. Krishna, I'm lacking this month a room rent. Can you please arrange something? He'll arrange something you get. And not even Krishna. It says even in Kashi, anybody who prays to Mother Durga, another expansion of Srimati Radharani, that person will not go hungry that day. And every now and then they say, anybody who prays to Srimati Radharani, he will not go hungry that day. And I checked with the Brajavasis, they all confirm this. They all confirm this. This is the point.
labor is for sinful people. Work hard like the karmis do, but for Krishna you do that. That's the point here. That's what Prabhupada wanted. Why waste their human energy on these kind of things?
What then would be your suggestion for the children being educated in Mayapur? How would you introduce Vedic way of teaching British curriculum?
Well, first of all, I have no position here in Mayapur, neither am I an authority. I can only speak on my realizations. That's what I did. The proper person to ask is Udi Bhakti Vidya Purnaswami, who's a recognized, authorized teacher in Mayapur, and how to put all these things in there. Because some things are helpful, but my point is the way how to teach them. One thing, some things I mentioned, Brahmachari is essential. Brahmachari for Brahmacharinis and Brahmachari is also. And then you have your system, I am out of school for the last 16, 17, 19 years. So I don't know what they're teaching now in school. Because I found out by looking in these school books of my cousins, some younger cousins, that they are learning something different than what I used to learn in school. So even I can't even comment on that, what they're learning. But they seem to change their things what they're learning. But we have Vedic mathematics. We have Jyotish. We have Vedic Vastu. We have Vedic cooking. So we can teach all these kind of things. And there's a lot of demand. I can guarantee you, if you are an expert Vedic cook, you can open anywhere, any restaurant, Govinda's restaurant, and it will flourish like anything. There's a lot of, Indian Vedic standards are very high class. There's a lot of demand in that. Like in Holland, I remember the place I grew up in, there was a big shopping mall. It was typical, shopping mall built in the, in the 60s, before I was born. So this typical big log, of concrete, basically. Recently I went there, and to my great surprise, they had cut roofs in all the different floors. And they put on top, they put a glass circular, area, room. You know what that means? It's called Vastu. So even if the materialists are rebuilding the shopping malls into a Vastu system, because Vastu means you have a main pranic flow through the building, which means you have to cut the roof a little. That's what you find in the old houses. You can look up through the ceiling, like that. There's sometimes there is an iron frame there. But that's the system of Vastu, which means there's a main mukhya prana of the building. So a materialist, especially the Dutch, who are very greedy, known to be very greedy, they would not invest in these kind of things if it would not give profit. So there's much more demand for Vedic sciences than we realize. Like that. And I found some Indians are making big money in the West with a big smile on their face. But small things they know. Little Vastu, little Jyotish. And they make big money. Like that. If it is simply money what you want to earn, it's there. One has to simply have faith. Plus you have the piety, then you can do anything you like with Krishna's blessings. Like that. Anything else? What? Oh, I see. So this is from Parthasarthi Prabhu from Coimbatore. By chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, shall we solve our financial and material problems too? Any examples from Puranas? So by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, can we solve our financial problems? So that will be a major question, a major challenge. I want to see an example. Example would be Prabhupada. In the Puranas, I have to first think, because Puranas are very elaborate. Prabhupada simply chanting Hare Krishna, he founded this ISKCON society. And he was very proud of coming to India. Simply by having 45 rupees, I think it was equivalent of $20 at the time, isn't it? American dollars. Now he has worth 20 crores of property, like that. This one example, by chanting Hare Krishna, he founded an ISKCON society, a very rich ISKCON society. In the Puranas, yes, one example is there. Is Sudama Vipra. He just chanted and chanted and chanted. Of course, every day was Nirjala Ekadashi for him, that's another thing. But he went to Krishna and became the richest man in the world. That's one example. Other examples? Anybody has an example from the Puranas? Yes, we have the example of Shivas Thakur. Mahaprabhu says, Shivas, I'm seeing you just worshipping all day and you're not working to maintain your family. Shivas, shouldn't you work a little bit? No, no, everything is your mercy. But Shrivas, you have a family and a child to maintain. And Shrivas did like this. What did it mean? Three claps. Shrivas said, Mahaprabhu, one day I can fast. 2 days I can fast. 3 days I can fast. The fourth day I will jump in the Ganges and give up my life if you don't maintain me. Mahaprabhu, he cried. He said, if even Lakshmi has to go begging one day, the goddess of fortune, even then my devotee will not be impoverished. See? And yeah, like that. So that's an example. It's not really from the Puranas, but still. It was a Puran, the one I have from the Puranas. So think of a Puranic example. Another example would be like Ravana. Ravana, he got his Lanka by pious activities, not by worshipping Krishna, but the way he got Lanka is a very interesting story. Ravana was so qualified that he could do yajnas nobody else could do. A very powerful Brahmana. So Narada came once he passed by in Shivalok, and he made a gesture that, you know what you're saying in the universe? You know, Lakshmi has his palace, Saraswati has his palace. You two are living under a tree like impoverished beggars. So Shiva didn't care for that, but Parvati got upset. He said, what are they saying? They're saying like this? My lord, we have to build a palace so great that it will surpass all the palaces in the entire universe. Okay, if you desire so. So by their power, they created this golden Lanka. In which there was a Spatika Linga, very effulgent, strong Shiva Linga. So now they say, okay, now we have to do Griha Pravesh Samskar. Anybody knows what's the Griha Pravesh Samskar? I hope you all know that. It's part of your cultural identity. It is a ceremony you do before entering the house. Then it's done after the marriage ceremony. But if you build a new house or a shop, you have to invite a Brahmana or a Gurukuli or a cow even. And you can purify that house from all inauspiciousness. So they said, okay, who will be the priest for that? Rishiva said, I heard Ravana is a very good priest. Invite him. So they invited Ravana and he did a lot of pious activities by doing this yajna. But he's also very cunning. Because after the sacrifice, you have to give some dakshina to the Brahmana. So they had, so Rishiva asked, what dakshina do you want? So Ravana said, So he's looking at all this golden Lanka, this beautiful spatik, this crystal linga. But I would like to have this Lanka as a dakshina. So he got this Lanka as dakshina. Parivata was really upset, but Rishiva just said, no, let's go. We are happy under the tree. So there's one thing by pious activity one can earn like that. A little bit cunning, but still, it's pious activity. Also, Hanuman said that also. When he was captured by Ravana's Rakshasas and invited in front of Ravana to appear, then he started to speak to Ravana as a son. He said, my dear son, because now he was in the mood of Shiva, Hanuman said that. You earned all these powers and all this prestige by pious activities. Why are you wasting it now by sinful activities, by kidnapping somebody's wife? I promise you, if you return Sita, everything will be okay. Ravana started to laugh. For so long I looked for a guru, I couldn't find any. Finally I found a guru and it turns out to be a monkey. He was saying like this. So this is Ravana. Anyway, by pious activity he earned all these powers. Anything else? Oh, another one from cyberspace. Yes, Madhuri.
Krishna Prabhu, I would like to ask, with the children, no? Who determine the particular nature of the children? Because as the children is born, each has his own particular nature, like she's a Brahminical, with Brahminical blood, Kshatriya blood, Vaishya, or Sudra. Now, like us, when we want to choose that they should go to Gurukul, as far as I know, there are authority that screen whether your children has a Brahminical nature. Then, if they are not, then they should go to other school. Then we have choices here in Mayapur. But you're saying that the significance of our Gurukul education. So, what will happen to the children if the authority will say that they don't have a Brahminical nature? So, what will be our view about it?
So, your question in essence is how to understand the nature of a child. Where he's one of the four varnas. Now, previously in Vedic times, because there was seminal purity, it was very obvious, a child from a Brahmin's family will be from Brahminical qualities. But gradually there are mixes, and in day and age, it's not clear, even from a Brahmin's family, somebody might turn out to be a Rakshasa. It's like that. So, the question would be how to determine. One thing is, if devotees properly follow the Garbhadhan Sanskar, and part of the Garbhadhan Sanskar is that you go to a Jyotish, an astrologer, and ask him, I want to have a child of Brahminical or Kshatriya nature, because the 28 constellations, nakshatras, they all have certain qualities. And like Brahminical, can you give an example of one constellation having a Brahminical quality? Sorry? That's a zodiac. I'm talking about nakshatras, 28 nakshatras. Okay, anyway, you can ask an astrologer, okay, under this constellation I should impregnate my wife, then the power of the constellation will be imbibed in the child. So you can determine by that already what kind of nature he will have. Now, if you didn't know anything about Garbhadhan before you got your children, then what you can do is go to an astrologer and find out even. And if you can study also in other signs, which is very common in India, even at present, called palmistry, a simplified version of astrology. And in palmistry, you have these thicknesses in the palm. These thickness, you know, they're like mountains on the palm. They correspond to the planetary balas, the influence of the planets. So by this you can also find out what is the nature of your child. And even if you don't know that, then simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the holy name will reveal what nature you have. And it's basically applicable for us who didn't know anything before we came. So astrology is here, Jyotish is a must for that, by knowing what is the nature. And often what I find is that, like myself, when I had to go to university, I had no idea what I wanted to study. I liked so many things, and basically you should study that what you are talented at, what you can become successful at. But at the age of, 16, 17, when you enter university, then you have no idea what to do. So at that time, astrology would have been a very helpful guide that this is your talent, this is your nature, study this and you will be successful. This is one way to do. The Acharya generally would use astrology, but if it's very powerful, you can just see whether this child is Brahminical nature or not. Like, we have this example of Jabal and Satyakam. Jabal was the son of a prostitute. So when he came to the Guru, and the Guru asked, what is your Varna? What is your Gotra? So he went to his mother, he didn't know. So mother said, I don't know, I had connection with so many men, so tell that to your Guru. So he came to the Guru and said, I don't know, my mother doesn't know who is my father. So he said, okay, you're a Brahmin because you're honest. Like that. A teacher could find out. And I know that in this Gurukul now, they have started using astrology, isn't it? To determine the natures of the Gurukulis. Another point is that it is not only that Gurukul education is for Brahminical inclined people. That's not true at all. Because Gurukul education was for the three upper classes, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. Otherwise, what would Krishna and Balaram do in the Gurukul of Sanipani Muni? They are not Brahmanically inclined. They were tending cows and Balaram was plowing the field. And they were taking fuel wood from the forest. So Gurukul education is for everyone. But it's just like when you, nowadays, you enter school, you have to learn a certain subject. Everyone has to learn. But gradually you specialize in certain subjects. So humility, cow protection, all these things everyone had to learn. But then, knowing the nature, the Guru say, okay, for you, the Dharma Shastras and the Rajaniti section is more important because you're going to be a Kshatriya. You're going to be a Brahmana, anything, everything you have to learn. You're going to be a Vaishya, more the Artha Shastras is for you. Like that. So these are, does it answer your question? Okay, so these were the questions. Mike. We don't hear.
Okay, in our Gurukul is like this, but a little bit different is that usually it just excels, the kid is excelling in that particular quality. For example, somebody just interested about how to manage, how to organize things, how to make everything, get everything done. So it's like more like Kshatriya, or he just, whatever he touches, makes money. Like, we have a boy like that in our school, he's a Gujarati gentleman, and then what he does, he just does a shop. We have a Gurukul shop during festival, and that's what he does.
Oh. Is it paras?
Yes.
Paras means a stone you touch becomes gold.
Yes, something like that. So, there are some other boys who are just anything was wrong, anything was bad, they just fix it. Like in 5 minutes, it's fixed. That's how it goes. So other boys suggest that they just memorize everything and they can just teach it. Even just teaching in the classroom, that particular class for 1 month or 2 months, he can already teach whatever he learned because he just have the ability to teach. So these kind of qualities automatically just come up, like sprung up, like that. So then when we teach in our school, actually it's very specific in that way, that all these qualities just come up. So then we have to even actually, I call it, research it or something. We just encourage whatever comes up and you just develop it. So whatever quality they bring up, or they come up with, so we just nourish that particular thing.
So basically you're using the verse, Tanes Chita Shruti Katam Tanuman Manovir. But this is from the 10th canto, where it says, stay in the position you are and do that for Krishna. So basically you do that what you like.
Basically,
what you're good at.
Because that's the most comfortable for them and they just develop on that and just expand on that. And they get very good in it. So that's what is important. They have the spiritual background and one or two subjects, they are very expert. And then we were actually talking about a few days ago that just only if you clean. There was a devotee, he was washing dishes in Soho Street in London. And he made that much money within 1 month of washing dishes over there. He got some donation from the temple. And he got that much money that he was staying in India for 2 months as a holiday and went back to Hungary. And he was living there for how many months? 9 months. And he went back to Soho again and then did again 1 month of working, washing dishes. This is just one subject, washing dishes. In a Gurukul. It's basically one of those things which is like...
Yeah, so this underlines my statement is that Gurukul creates the proper piety which makes you that you can live off your piety. You don't have to work much. So anyway, I asked one of those Gurukulis who's sitting here right in this assembly, I went, because I wanted to check all these things which I found out, is that I asked one of the senior Gurukulis is that you have been practicing our Gurukul life for 16 years. Do you feel that your desires are being fulfilled? He said, yes. He desires and it's fulfilled. See, because he has enough piety now. Like that. This is an example, confirmed statement. Okay. Anything else? Okay. We should end here. Oh, no, one little last question. Yeah. This is a very nice one actually. Arjuna was confused and knowledge helped him get through the war. I don't exactly know what he's targeting at. This Kamlesh from Laguna Beach, CA. I don't know what that is. California? Okay, CA. Arjuna was confused and knowledge helped him get through the war. I don't know what he's actually asking, but I can say one thing, but this was a point I was thinking of. It mentions here that Sati showed womanly weakness, feminine weakness. So I was saying, what is this feminine weakness? So one feminine weakness is actually attachment to family members. So I'm this point, going towards Arjun's answering this question is that one sees the same thing with Sati. She failed to listen to her husband because of familial attachments. And also the same thing Draupadi did in the first canto, failing to punish Ashwatthama because of familiar affection. You know, like, I don't want to see what is the wife's name of... Kripi. Yeah, I don't want to see Kripi being a widow. So the same womanly weakness is there, that because of relationship, they can give up anything. It's a very good qualification if you do it for Krishna. For the relationship with Krishna, they can give up everything. That's what the gopis did. Now, if this feminine weakness is manifest in a man, then what is it called? Kalebhyam ma sva gama parth. It's called eunuch. A feminine weakness... You know, family attachment is manifest in a man, and therefore he neglects his duty. Krishna calls it to be a eunuch. See? So now, if one has eunuch weakness, another word is weakness of the heart, then the antidote for feminine weakness is to give knowledge. You're not this body. All these relatives in your previous life were not your relatives, and in the next lifetime they will not be your relatives. Why are you crying for them now because they are, gathered on a battlefield to fight with you? Like that. And besides, Natvevaham Jatu Nasam, never was there a time that they did not exist. Like that. So in this way, knowledge helped him through the war. So now here there was nobody to advise Sati once she already set her mind to go to her father's house. Shiva tried his best to advise Sati, don't go because your father is envious, etc. But Sati could not listen. Too much attachment to her father and her family. And while she was going, she thought, let me check out if they're really offensive towards my husband. And then she thought, why should I live? Why should I have such a body who's offensive towards my husband? And then she decided to give up that body. And there was another point long time ago in the classes that when one dies, one has to wear saffron robes, right? So saffron, this tradition we find also among the Rajputs in Rajasthan. In the ceremony called Johar, when there is no chance for victory, the warriors would have put on saffron robes and jump into the fire of battle. Because it was the last battle of their life. You'll be super ferocious. They never ever fought like that before. It was the last battle of their life. So, you know, sometimes they would make a vow like, I will kill 50 enemies before I die. So they would do that. Akbar's chronicles confirm this. And the woman would put on their bridal dress, and the kshatranis voluntarily would jump into the fire, and they would not cry out in pain. Because they knew, if my husband is dying in a fire of battle, I'm willing to give up my life in the same way, in dying in the fire, because then we'll meet either back to Godhead or in Swarga. That is the sati rite. See? It's only possible for very chaste women like that. It's not possible for any common woman to do like that. Therefore, and these women are worshipable according to scripture. If you go to Rajasthani forts, if you enter the main gate, then at the gate walls one finds handprints. Even nowadays, they do still do puja there. What are these handprints? These are handprints which are worshipped of the queens who performed sati. Rukmini did sati, Satyabhama did sati. Like that. Even Sita, she did sati. Right? She had to enter the fire, and then Maya Sita was taken, and the real Sita came out. So like that. Of course, you need the Britishers to criticize that, but we don't care for the Britishers. Enforcement, no. We know that. We need Prabhupada for that. Okay, I think we have to end here. Grandhrashrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.